Let's begin. Selling organs is a topic which is relatively current, in that it's still being spoken about. For the most part, as far as I know, in Western, modern, civilized societies, I'm not aware, I didn't do any thorough searches, I don't know if there are exceptions, but for the most part, certainly generally frowned upon and in fact illegal for a person to buy or sell organs. However, I believe there may be other parts of the world where it may be legal, and there are certainly other parts of the world in where there is a black market for organs. So the question that I would like to discuss with you today is, what would the halachic approach be? Should there be, a Knesset subcommittee, which there probably has been, and usually when they have these kind of things, they do ask for halachic policy experts. They don't necessarily go with that, but they do often take that, at least officially, into evidence. So what would we say? What would we say if we were asked, what is the halachic position? Is a person allowed to sell his or her organs? Now, it would seem, I'm just speaking now prima facie, misvara, if I'm a person who is, God forbid, dying, and I need an organ, so hard to imagine that anything would stop me from trying to buy one, right? Other than with very few exceptions, ein davar omed bifnei pikuach nefesh. But that's for me if I'm the chola. But the question is, someone who's looking, to marry off a kid or put on an extension on the house and is short, $25,000-$50,000, you never know what you can get for a good kidney. Now, I give the example of kidneys specifically, although it's not exclusive, because obviously we're speaking about a living person selling a kidney. We have to be speaking about something which, A, can be transplanted, and B, you can live without. We're not discussing, selling your heart as part of a suicide pact. That's not the discussion. Okay? Now, there is a discussion which we will not get into. I thought to maybe include it, but really it would probably have to be a separate shear. The problem is it would only be like a half a shear, so I kind of just got left off, which is, what about posthumous selling of organs? What if a person leaves in his or her will, or let's say his children are disappointed at the size of the will, but they have figured out a way to maximize the assets of Bubby or Zadie. So that is a real, real discussion, halacha, which we will not be discussing. However, we will be discussing, again, the question of whether we, on our own, out of our own volition, for whatever reason, again, I gave you as an example, deliberately, not necessarily tongue-in-cheek, but deliberately I picked a crass example of someone who's looking to do an extension on their house. But the truth is, there can be far more noble reasons. And the question is whether the motivation even matters. Does it matter? Let's say a person has their own relative who needs some very expensive medicine or experimental procedure, and the insurance won't cover it, and they need $200,000, and they only have $150,000, and they see Bubby dying, and they want to sell their kidneys so that they have the $50,000 to fly them down to Brazil or wherever to have that experimental procedure. So the question is whether motivation matters at all, and I want to absolutely get into that in the final stage of the shiur. But let's leave motivation out. At this point, I'm just giving it to you illustratively to give you as an example, so you understand what we're speaking about. And that's the question. Now, if you'll recall, and there will be some overlap, especially in the beginning, we did discuss previously, I think it was in the last semester, we had a shiur on organ donation, on living organ donation. And we will make reference here and there to that discussion, but just very much b'kitzur at the outset, what we saw then as what seemed to be the conclusion and the consensus of poskim is that while there's no strict obligation to donate an organ, even if it could save another person's life, the risk involved to the donor does not require, such a level that it's not required. On the other hand, it is considered a very, very big mitzvah, very laudable, and as the medical technology has gotten more and more expert, and the risk for the donor has gone down and down, poskim, again, are getting closer and closer to wanting to, I wouldn't say obligating, but at least strongly encouraging But again, as far as I know, I think I said at the time, I'm not aware of any postkin who, at least at this point, are willing to, strictly speaking, obligate it. But strongly encourage, yes, but obligated, no. So that's the background. And I want to discuss the issue specifically, again, admittedly with the overlap from the previous lecture, the specific question of selling organs through a number of perspectives. Number one, as we have seen, and we'll review it in a moment, we know that there's a prohibition of chavala. There is an issue always of self-injury, self-mutilation. A person's not allowed to do that. Well, why not? And it's one thing if you're trying to save yourself, etc., but to do that just for something like money, is that allowed? So that's going to be our first question. A second question, which is related but from a different halachic and philosophic perspective, is usually you can only sell things that you own, right? Because I happen to think that I could get a few bucks for those glasses. Can I sell them? But of course not. They're not mine. I can only sell things that belong to me. So, of course, this raises the halachic and philosophic question, do I own my kidney? Do I own my body? Second point, which I want to get to. And then, a third point, which is, to what extent are you allowed to? Again, this relates to a topic we've done previously, even the issue with the doctor strike 2 weeks ago, accepting money for a mitzvah, charging money to save a person. How do we evaluate that? And finally, some closing words just on public policy. But let's start first with a short, unscientific, and non-binding poll. I won't hold anyone to anything, but just curious. Instinctively, what's your gut reaction, your gut instinct, without having learned anything yet? What do you think? Should the state of Israel or any other, hopefully ethical society, allow people to sell organs? Who says yes? Yeah, I'm asking, what do you think? Obviously, I'm asking you as a firm Jew, what do you think?
We're not
doing halacha. We don't know the halacha yet. I'm asking you, what do you think? What's your instinct? What is your bias that you're going to bring to today's shiur? Do you think that it's the right thing? Should we allow people to sell organs? Anyone say yes? Okay, anyone say no? Okay, I would say just my quick unscientific view of your unscientific responses was it looked to be about 60-40 no. Was close, but it looked like so far the nays happened. Okay, we'll see at the end of this year if that is confirmed or denied. Okay, let's start this year. Look at source number one. This, again, to review, is a basic Gemara. We've seen it before, but it's necessary to begin today's shiur. And that is the notion that according to halacha, a person is not allowed to injure or mutilate him or herself. Man tana deshamet le de'amar ein adam rishoy lachbo ba'atmo. It's a machlokes tana'im, and the rabbis in the time of the Mishnah debated it. But there is an opinion which is accepted la'halacha that you're not allowed to injure yourself. But the Gemara doesn't know where it comes from. How do we know this? So the Gemara gives a number of possible sources from which the Chachamim could derive the source of self, the prohibition of self-injury. The Gemara, according to the opinion that I have for you on the page, gives the following. Abraita, Detanya, Mekarin al-Hames, V'lo midarche ha-mori. We know that Chas v'shalom lo'aleinu, a person becomes an Avel, so one of the things they do is they tear Kriya. So the Gemara says, that's not superstitious, that's not violating, that's not some heebie-jeebie pagan thing, that's considered a halacha. However, the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Elazar, if someone tears Yoser Midai, right, you only have to tear about 3 inches or so, or you know, just about this, but let's say a person wants to the whole thing, so says the Gemara, Loka Mishum Baltashas. You're not allowed to. You can't just destroy, right? We take physical property seriously, and you shouldn't be overly destructive. Now, I don't want to digress into Baltashas or Hilchos Avelus. These are not our topics. Ladies, stay focused. But the Gemara says, in that context, you see that there's even a prohibition unnecessarily of destroying physical property. Usually, to just rip open your shirt would, of course, be a prohibition of Baltashas. When it's a mitzvah because of kriya of avelos, so you do it. But even then, you don't do more than you have to. So the Gemara says, according to this opinion, if it's usur to rip your shirt, kol shekein gufo, it is certainly usur to rip open your arm or any other part of your body. Okay, now as I mentioned, there are other possible sources for the halacha, but I'm specifically giving you this one because it leads to an important question and principle of Tosfos here in source number 2. Tosfos asks the question, are you really telling me this Braita, the Gemara? You have to be, sometimes to appreciate a question in the Mefarshim, you have to kind of be sensitive to even the nuances of the language of the Gemara. Tosfos understood that the Gemara was kind of trumpeting as if it somehow, you know, discovered America, this great Chiddush, that a person is allowed to tear Kriya, even though ordinarily we have this halacha called Baal Tashlis. Says Tosfos, source number 2, V'chi al zeh tzarech lav Yiraya. This is what we needed, this Braita to come and teach us this new halacha called Kriya. This is something that we know this is a halacha. We have a whole other perek and mesechta and moed katna, the whole halacha, the whole perek, dealing with the laws of Avelus and Kriya. What do we need this Braita coming to tell me this big, big chiddush? Ooh, wow. We know this already, says Tosfos. So says Tosfos, no, Omari, something more subtle is going on here. Ein o mevi raya ella, she'osr lachbo, afilu litzora. Even if a person was doing the ripping, the tearing, the destruction, letzorech, for a good reason, if they do more than they have to, is prohibited. Just like tearing the shirt is letzorech, it's a good reason, but if a person gets overwhelmed with grief and tears more than they have to, that could be a prohibition. So too, says Tosfos, we take out a salient point for our topic, because again, not to be confused, we're not discussing the laws of Kriya or Baal Tashlis today. But for our point, says Tosfos, we see another point, which is, not only are you not allowed to injure yourself stam, wantonly, even letzorech, even if you had a good reason to injure yourself, you still can't do it. It's usur, even letzorech. That is the principle that Tosfos lays down here, which derived from the example of Kriya on the shirt. Okay, so far, so good. If it, even if it's letzorech, if it's otherwise prohibited, letzorech does not change that. Okay? The example of overboard related to the Kriya. But in general, says Tosfos, you see from this that even if there's a tzorech, even if there's a need, just like you can't do too much Kriya, you also can't do a chabala, an injury to yourself, even if you think you have a good reason. Number 3, however, seems to present a possible contradiction. We haven't gotten... So far, we're just going along too smoothly. So it only gets exciting when we hit our first bump in the road. That's now. This is also, again, for those of you with strong memories, we've seen this story before in a previous year. The Gemara number 3 tells us about Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda, like many rabbis in the time of the Gemara or the Mishnah, right? Women weren't the only one with long skirts, right? The men wore these kind of robes or capes or, you know, we've seen the pictures or... the movies from not necessarily of Jewish, but there are periods of history where women, men wore these kind of clothing too. And Rav Chisda was walking, he was walking like through the thistles, through the thorn bushes. He was walking, you know, on a tiul, and he was worried, of course, that what would happen, that his pants, his clothing, his uniform would get all ripped. So I don't know so much about this, but like, what do you do when sometimes you? What do women do? You go, exactly. So that's exactly what Rav Chisda did. He didn't even have to go to Emily Post or, you know, he knew how to do this on his own. However, what happened? Medali luhu lamane. What happened, of course, when he lifted that up, the clothing was perfectly fine. But his legs got all cut up. And the Talmidim who were watching this were bothered. We thought you're not allowed to do something that injures yourself. If he had kept his pants or his outfit lower, it would have gotten ripped, but he probably would have protected his body. So how did he do that? So he answers, Amar, he tells them, Ze ma'ala aruka, this will heal, this ze eino ma'ala aruka. Right? Eventually my legs will heal, but if the clothing gets ripped, the clothing gets ripped. Right? Nothing is, you know, in the name of fashion, people are willing to sacrifice. Even Rav Chisda, apparently. Okay? So what do you see from this Gemara? Here, Rav Chisda did something which was self-injurious. He allowed himself to be injured.
Not on purpose.
Was, but he did it. Letzorech. He had a good reason. He wasn't a masochist. He did it for a good reason. So a number of Mefarshim wonder, do we not have a contradiction? On the one hand, we had the story from Tosafot Lehi. Thank you very much for the pen. Shekoch, we have a contribution to Machon Lander, Women's Beit Medrash Program, a black pen. Okay.
Hide it.
I'm taking it.
Oh, well, that works better.
What do you think? On the one hand, the Gemara seems to say the first point with the story with the Kriya is that it was Asur, even, right here, Asur, even Litzora. But now we have the story with Rav Chisda, which would imply that it was Mutar, since it was done Litzora. Now, there are a number of possible answers that we could give. I even heard some of you calling out one which I think is a good one, which we'll get to in a second. But this is the apparent contradiction. So I want to share with you three answers. And the three answers will begin our discussion with direct relevance to whether a person is allowed to injure him or herself in order to sell an organ. So one approach that's given to trying to resolve this, I was not able to locate in a primary source, which is why it's not on your sheet, but I did see in an article quoted in the name of Rav Wozner. Rav Wozner, as you know, is one of the oldest, most venerated poskim alive today, the Rav of the Zichron Meir neighborhood in Bnei Brak, already from Big Talmud Chacham from before the war. He was a Talmud of Rav Meir Shapiro in Lublin. The Sima Daf Yomi is coming up in a month, so he was a Talmud of Rav Meir Shapiro even before the war. And Rav Wozner, who's the author of a very, very multi-volume, very respected book of Tshuvas called the Shevet HaLevi, he says a first possible answer. He says he wasn't trying to hurt himself. When we say you can't be chovel yourself, it means you can't hurt yourself. He wasn't hurting himself. He was taking a tew. He was walking across the river. He was walking through the bushes. By lifting up his clothing, he wasn't hurting himself. He was just removing something which could have. But you, if I ask you, define what is Rav Chisda doing as he walks, would you say, oh, see that man? He's hurting himself. No, you'd say, you see that man? He's walking. Incidentally, the way he's choosing to walk, he's going to get hurt. But you wouldn't call that a Maisa Chavala. He's not injuring himself as much as he's doing something which then let him get injured. Number one. And number two, as Rav Wozner, it's not even necessarily the case. Right? You know, some people know how to dance through the raindrops. Some people know how to, you know, who knows how bad it would be. It wasn't a definite, nor was it on purpose. It wasn't deliberate or definite. So therefore, Rav Wozner says, that's allowed. What was talking about here, Osir, is no, when you know you're going to get hurt, and you're the one, I'm so upset that Nebuch, my Bubby died, and I'm ripping my skin to shreds. So that's, I love my Bubby. And my grandmother just passed away a few months ago, so it's still in my head. Usser even litzorach. That's if it's definite and deliberate. But the story, which over here was allowed, so when is it prohibited? Only if it's definite, but also if it's an act of chavala. It's not an incidental act, it's an act of chavala. You're deliberate. Oops. Okay, so therefore, says Rav Wozner, in light of that, he thinks that selling organs should be usur. It would transgress the prohibition of chavala. After all, when you donate your kidney or some other such organ, you are definitely going to be injured. You'll heal, God willing, but you will. The surgery is lots of blood and very serious. You are definitely doing a chavala. Now, it's true that that's not why you're doing it. You're not doing it because you're a masochist. You're not doing it because you enjoy pain. But that doesn't matter, Sir Hoster. It's definite, and when they take out that scalpel, that is the deliberate act of Chavalah. Now, it's a Chavalah for a reason, but that's what Tosa said. Even for a reason, it's Asr. Afilo Litzarech, it's Asr. And therefore, he suggests that selling organs should be Asr. Again, we haven't got to any other issues yet.
Then he'd say that donating an organ to your own child would also be Asr.
No. Well, let me... Let me take
if you're saying that it doesn't make a difference.
I don't want to put any. Listen, let's take out the example of child, because that, all that does is raises everyone's emotions, but that doesn't actually affect anyone's halacha. Right? But the point is, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't think... We're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. Again, we're going to get to all of it, I hope. Again, I told you, I didn't see the tshuva or the article that Rosner wrote inside myself. But on this particular point, again, if somebody... I'll give you an easy example. Again, I can't say for sure that I know what he's referring to, but I'll give you an easy example which may help you digest this. Let's say it's to some kind of a bank. I don't mean, you know what I mean, to take blood, for example, as in a blood bank. But let's take something else. Let's say to, you know, on ice, so to speak. On ice. So there, we generally have a principle. When you do not have a chole lefanenu, someone who's right there ready to get, whether it's your child or a stranger, so then we usually do not apply the laws of pikuach nefesh. One of our remaining classes, I haven't decided yet which week, we're going to discuss the issue of autopsies. And this is a big issue there as well, because obviously, despite the shrill voices you hear when you see some of these crazy protests, no one's doing autopsies just because they like cutting up dead people. Right? They do them because there's a reason. That doesn't mean it's necessarily mutter. We're going to have to discuss. But if the doctor, if the authorities think that they're going to help, whether it's an advance of medical science or solve a crime or whatever, and therefore they want to do an autopsy, so there is a tzorach. Now, does that allow nivul hames? That's a separate question. That'll be a lecture we'll have. But the point is, we have a principle of chola lefanenu. So at minimum, let's put it this way. Again, I don't want to be advocating for a Wozner. It's not my role, and I'm not convinced that he's right anyway. But the best case scenario I could describe what he says would be exactly that. There's no chola lefanenu. It's just a question of, I need the cash now. I want to sell the organ. I want to donate it. Apparently, again, I didn't see it inside. I just quoted in an article. He held it was usur, a violation of chavala. However, there are two other explanations which may yield different results. Number four is the commentary on the Gemara, a well-known, highly regarded commentary, the commentary called the Pnei Yehoshua. He gives a different explanation. And he says we have to distinguish between what he calls a tzorech gadol and a tzorech ktsas. A few of a chobel ba'atzmo shari, heichadika tzorech gadol. Now, how to apply this is not always clear. It's a little bit surprising that Rav Chisda's clothing should be considered tzorech gadol. Then again, it wasn't a bad injury either. But apparently there's a sliding scale, says the Pnei Yehoshua. And it depends on how great the need is. Tosfos had said, even litzorech. Okay, yeah. What's the need, you know? My son came home a few months ago, you know, a few weeks after getting a new pair of sneakers. Abba, I need a new pair of sneakers. I said, well, what do you mean exactly when you say need? You know, I need a Porsche. It ain't gonna happen. Okay, what does that mean, need? So, that's exactly what the Pnei Yehoshua says. You have to, again, sometimes the devil's in the details. You could quibble on this case or that case. But just speaking generally, he says, we have to distinguish between a tzorech gadol versus tzorech tzas. Therefore, he says, when it's a big need, a great need, then it's allowed. If it's going to be something that's more negligible, especially if it's a great injury, then certainly that would be prohibited. Again, I don't have it on the sheet, but I saw in that same article that a psak, I think maybe it's only Baal Peh, a psak, the name of Rav Eliashiv, in which Rav Eliashiv apparently said, based on this second approach, that if you have a situation in which somebody has a great need, that is to say, they need a substantial amount of money, which they don't have, and they will get the money by selling the organ, that would constitute a tzorech gadol, and that would permit the person to sell his or her organ. Okay? So again, depending on how, this seemed like a very academic, hypothetical contradiction. What's the difference? How you resolve it? It can become very practical. Rav Wozner accepted one explanation that yielded one result. Apparently, Rav Eliashiv had a different explanation of the Gemaras, and that yielded a opposite result. Give me one second, please. just want to tell you a third possibility. And the third possibility is suggested by Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this is a tshuva that we actually have seen part of already, because this is Rav Moshe's famous nose job tshuva. Which we saw. I said, we've seen this. We had our shiur on cosmetic surgery. And we saw that Rav Moshe developed, which then he applied to cosmetic surgery. Now we've raised the stakes a little bit. Rav Moshe developed a thesis for how to define what is the prohibition of chavala, of self-injury. And Rav Moshe, which if you remember, I told you at the time, I heard from Rav Shechter that Rav Soloveitchik also had the same approach, but it's all based on a comment of the Rambam in source number 5. The Rambam, in source number 5, when he identifies and defines the prohibition of chavala, he adds two words, although we're not sure what the second word is. There's different versions. One is, he said, what is it? You can't hurt yourself. Derech nitzayon. Or in other versions it's of the text, it's derech bizayon. So bizayon is easier to translate. You can't do it in a way that you're trying to humiliate yourself. Nitzayon seems to be more in a belligerent, perhaps confrontational, almost fisticuffs, pugilant type of way. It's harder to translate. That's why I needed 5 words to not get it right. Okay, but bizayon at least is easier to understand. But either way, said Rav Moshe, that is the controlling and limiting factor of this prohibition. When is it usher to hurt yourself? It depends on why you're doing it. It depended on your motivation. If you're doing it to hurt yourself, tarti mashma, you're doing it to denigrate yourself, to injure yourself, to hurt yourself, to humiliate yourself, etc. So then, that's the prohibition. But if you're doing it because, in fact, getting back to our cosmetic surgery example, because you think, Adarava, it's not bizayon. My nose now is a bizayon. Then I'm going to be a Shana Madel. Then I'm going to even be better. That's Derech Yofi, not Derech Bizayon. Said Rav Moshe, that would be a reason to be lenient. He adds, by the way, so how does that relate now to the Gemara speaks about Pasuk and Chumash, right? The original reason, the original reason, the meaning, lo sis go to do, right? You're not supposed to cut yourself, even if it's for the purpose of mourning. So couldn't you argue, well, that's a least letzorech? Maybe I should do that because it's like pagan. But why would that be a prohibition of chavala? Isn't that for a tzorech? So Moshe adds interesting nuance, which we actually did not discuss in the cosmetic surgery shiur. He adds the last line of source number 6. The haratzon lihitzta'er nechshav lo tzorech de b'chol ofen asra Torah. Even though you have a reason, it's not arbitrary. You didn't just roll out of bed and without thinking in a fit of insanity do it. You had a reason. But when the reason is to hurt, is because that's the way you want to make yourself feel bad. You want to express your mourning that way. That type of intentional infliction of pain, even though you can rationalize it, but that rationalization is itself a derech bizayon. So certain things are fundamentally so inappropriate that even though there's a reason, just because you have a reason doesn't make it a good reason. So even though Rav Moshe is saying yes, as long as there's a good reason, but it means to really be a good reason. And the interesting point of that tshuva about cosmetic surgery was Rav Moshe was, within certain limits perhaps, endorsing the fact that yes, a person who feels bad or him or herself because of their appearance, changing that, even if it involves what would otherwise be a chavala, is considered legitimate. We don't look at that as inherently deficient. In certain circumstances, that may be legitimate and therefore not be a problem. But something like intentionally harming yourself, whatever your rationalization is, I'm doing this to show my identification with the one who died, and da, 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 da. People can come with all sorts of rationalizations. That doesn't make it necessarily legitimate. That's Rav Moshe's tshuva there. How does that relate to us here? Take a look at source number 7. The Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham, he discusses, as far as I'm aware of, at least in 2 different places, he discusses the issue of selling organs. And here, we'll see a second source later in the shiur, but here, he suggests, based on exactly everything we just saw, that this should be a reason to permit not only donating, but even selling organs. And after giving this argument in his own, he then adds that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach more or less agreed with the rationale. That is to say, When is it prohibited to go under the knife, yours or someone else's? Derech bizayon, derech nitzayon, fill in the blank, however you want to translate those words. But when you're doing it either because you're motivated altruistically to help somebody, or you're motivated financially to help yourself, either way, that's not derech bizayon or derech nitzayon. Take a look, I'll just read the key line in source number 6. If there is a toeles, second line, lomi baya teles sharipoya. Obviously, if the focus is the benefit is a health. Va'afilo, I'm sorry, source number 7. Yes, I'm sorry. Second line of source number 7. Ela afilo le toeles shel mamon. Even if you're doing it for the reason of money. You know, we all pretend we're big tzaddikim and denigrate money. When it's somebody else's, of course. Right? But money pays the bills. You know, money does lots of important things. A person who doesn't have it, that's a real toeles. Therefore, he says, again, we're not discussing yet whether the person is going to get, you know, man or woman of the year at the shul dinner, and going to get maftar yayna, and going to be... We're not discussing how laudable or not this is. That's a second question, which we may get to later in this year. But is it mutter or not? So he says, yes, technically this would escape that prohibition. And he quotes the same idea from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Excuse me, from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. What's interesting, 10 minutes ago or so, a lot of you were asking about blood. What about donating blood? So I think most of us intuitively see a difference between donating blood and donating a kidney. After all, we've probably all donated blood. Anyone here donated a kidney? And part of the reason we've all donated blood is because we've all donated it multiple times because blood regenerates. It's another distinguishing factor. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in source number 8 about going to the blood bank to get paid. There were times, I think even in New York City and other places, where there were blood shortages, $15. You know, now the $15 would get you nothing. The kids would laugh at you, you know. But I guess they have to pay a little bit more now. I don't know if they still do it. But it wasn't unheard of. And it was at a time where it was relevant. People asked Ramosha, can I go down, make a few bucks, and donate blood? Ramosha has a tshuva on this, source number 8. And Ramosha there gives a heter. He gives a heter. But Dr. Abraham points out, it's so strange. What would you have expected the heter to be? Based on what is his nose job tshuva. It's not bizayon. It's not. That's a very and that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said. However, for whatever reason, in the actual blood selling blood tshuva number 8, Rav Moshe gives a different reason. Look at number where it's underlined. Vaday gam ata yikad gam refuah b'zeh. He starts off by saying, you know, we have a long history in Jewish tradition, going back to the Gemara, of bloodletting, where they thought that that was somehow healthy. So he has this line here. It sounds like he thinks, and I don't know if this is in any way substantiated medically, that somehow maybe replenishing blood or
healthy.
It's somehow that's healthy. Is there any truth to that? I know that. The question is that true now? Do we believe that at all?
No.
Yeah, so... Okay, I'm saying, though, but did anyone ever say that donating blood, the process of taking out the blood and your body's going to replenish it, is that somehow a good thing? I don't hold me, and I would say don't even hold Ramosha to whatever his medical knowledge was, but he does say that. I don't know if he was involved. I can't give him responsibility for every tshuva. Anyway, he says, but the main thing he says is continuation. Delo yeshinui gadol kol kach. You know, how is, again, with the kidney, without a kidney is a little different than with the blood, without the blood. Right? A few hours later, you got the blood again. He says, it's not such a big deal, basically. It's you know, as the kids would say, but it's no big deal. Vagam hayom mutzin harofim kimat blotzar. Plus, he says, there's almost no pain. It's nothing. So he has this like almost half-hearted, I would say less than 100% enthusiastic heter, based on these two points, that number one, it doesn't hurt, and number two, it's like nothing really happened, we can't even see what happened. There's no noticeable difference before you gave the blood and after you gave the blood. So I'm willing to accept that. It's just interesting, and I don't know anyone who has necessarily an answer, but the Abraham, I think, has a very good question. Why didn't Ramosha just quote himself? Give a better reason why it's mutter to do the blood. It's just not derech bizayon. And Dr. Abraham leaves it b'tzarachi, and he doesn't have an answer. I don't have an answer either. But clearly, if we only had the blood tshuva, that would not help us for selling organs. Because there's a lot of tsar. course, there's a noticeable difference. You can't compare. But given that we have Rav Moshe's earlier tshuva, the nose job tshuva, who would have thought that that would have a great consequence even beyond the world of Shidduchim? Because that set the same lumdus, the same rationale, that's exactly what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Dr. Abraham and others use to allow, again, from this perspective at least, the selling of organs. Ad kan, part one. Part two, I said, was a halachic philosophical question. Usually you can only sell things that you own. So good, it's not Chabala. According to Wozner, it is, but according to Yashir, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Dr. Abraham, it's not. Okay, 4-1, they win. But that's only one part of the question. Good, it's not an Avera. But maybe it's theft. Who gave me a right to sell it? So here I want to introduce you to a fascinating article which would be worthy of at least one shiur in its own right, just to read the article, which we're not doing because it's not directly on point. But many years ago, the great and singular, unique Torah giant of Zevin, or Shlomo Yosef Zevin, Zatzal, he wrote an article which is now published in a collection of his essays. The book is called L'Or HaLacha. He wrote a halachic essay all about Shylock according to halacha. Mishpat Shylock, source number 9, Berei HaLacha. From Shakespeare. So Shylock, the infamous anti-Semitic model, unfortunately, of the tip of the Jew who's lending the money, and if you can't pay back the money, you pay with the pound of flesh. So Rav Zevin wrote a whole halachic essay from about that question. A person would be allowed to give over a pound of flesh to pay off a debt? What would be the halachic perspective on such a thing? If we get rid of the caricature of it, get rid of the anti-Semitic canard that's associated with it. I mean, in English language now, the word Shylock is already a synonym. People know what that means. It's a very derogatory term and almost always associated with Jews.
No, I thought it was
the model. Shakespeare. I think Machon Lander has a class on Shakespeare. You could go there. I'm not here to debate Shakespeare with you. Of course Shylock is a Jew. Of course Shylock is a Jew. That's the point. In the American language now, Shylock, because of the character, has become synonymous with a very derogatory way of describing people who are do anything for money. And of course, you peel back this much beneath the surface, and what do you know? Somehow it's always Jews who get called Shylock. Exactly. My Shylock lawyer, my this, my that. Anyway, my banker, all this stuff. Okay, but leave that all aside. Interesting, but not for us. The halachic question, the philosophical question of Zevin, again, this is, you understand why I say he was a unique Torah giant. Right? You know, I don't want to put name, but imagine other Gedolim writing an article all about Shylock according to halacha. So, in that article, he makes the point, and he takes very strongly that this is 100% prohibited. What do I mean by prohibited? He says, philosophically, the whole thing could never get off the ground. What do you mean, pay a debt with your body? Buy something with your body? Your body is not yours. Take a look at number 9. He speaks very strongly. Koach ha-chayim shel guf ha-adam einenu shelo. Your body, your life, is not your own. Not only does that mean, he says, you can't kill yourself, you know, go to an extreme, throw away your life, commit suicide. He says, not only that, you can't sell, you can't give, you can't use as a mashkon, somehow, you know, as a down payment, a collateral, busser, gufo, any part of your body, a little bit, a lot of it, a whole of it. Harehu ki'ilu makne dover, she'eno shelo, she'ena kinyan nitpas klal. It would be as if I was selling something that's not mine. I could have a fully authorized contract with lawyers and witnesses all talk about me selling this beautiful pocketbook.
So then how could you donate?
Which would be completely unenforceable in court because I was selling something that wasn't mine. Where does Rav Zevin get this very strong formulation from? So he bases it on a number of things, but I gave you two highlights, sources number 10 and 11. Rav Zevin, part of what made him so colorful, and I guess you could say in certain circles a tad controversial, was he was Lubavitch. Now he was from before the Mishigas, but he Chabad has always been a little bit controversial in certain circles. So he first thing that he says, the first makor, which is his like big anchor, is the Alter Rebbe. Now, if you don't know anything about serious halacha, so you think of Lubavitch or the Alter Rebbe, you think of the Tanya, you think of the founding of Chabad, and that's all true and very important. But he was also a great posek, and he wrote a whole halacha work, what's called Shulchan Aruch HaRav, or Chabadskers often refer to it as Shulchan Aruch HaGraz, Hagaon Reb Zalman, from Zalman of Liadi. So Reb Zevin quotes this, and you have the quote here on the bottom. And he is one of the first, or one of the clearest, I guess you could say, to use the following formulation, which I think many of us take for granted, but here he's going to make it explicit, and we'll see, I hope in a minute, that it may not be true. But perhaps we've been assuming it. But here he says very clearly, what does the Shulchan Aruch HaRav say, number 10? You're not allowed to hurt anybody. Even if they give you permission, you still can't do it. Why? Ki ein la'adam reshus al gufo, klal lahakoso. A person has no ownership over his own body. So just like I can't sell my own body, I also can't give you permission to hit it. Just like I can't give you permission to destroy this purse, because it's not mine. I know you're never going to sit in the front row again.
Anything else you want to
buy? You know. We'll talk after Shira, okay? The point here is, okay, we're going to erase this now. Very important. No, one second. We have a concept which the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which again we all are familiar with, right? Person not owner of own body. Okay, I tried it messy enough that you don't see the spelling mistakes. Okay, that's number one. On the other hand, here we have Asur of Yisur, here we'll call it of Chavala, right? You can't hurt yourself. So comes along Rav Zevin, based on his reading of this Shulchan Aruch HaRav, or take a look at source number 11, the Radbaz, Rav David ben Zimra, early commentary from Egypt on the Rambam. Here he's actually talking about a slightly different context. We have a principle in halacha against self-incrimination. Ein adam meisim atma rasha. A guy walks into Beit Din, says, I killed that child. You've been having a police manhunt. I did it. Kill me. I admit it. Ein adam meisim atma rasha. It's a principle of Jewish legal prudence. We do not allow someone to be found guilty or in any way punish the person just based on his own admission. So the Rambam, when he quotes this, so you can imagine it's the kind of principle which would make everyone curious. Why not? You know, it would seem that a person pled guilty. What could be more compelling than that? How come the Torah has such a rule? So in the context of discussing this, the Rambam has a line here in number 11. That's a quote from the Rambam, actually. Kolo shel davar, gzeres hamelechiv ein onu yodim hatam. The Rambam shuts that down. Don't even speculate. We don't know why. You could make all sorts of reasons why it should have worked. But the Torah says, no, period. The Rambam says, we're not speculating. That's the Rambam. So comes along the Radbaz, a commentary on the Rambam. He says, well, Efshir Lotzei Ktsas Tam. He's like in a mischievous mood. You know, the Rambam says, no. It's like, you know, loudly with the parents saying no, and the kids can't take no for an answer. Well, what about 30 minutes on the computer? Okay, no. What about 10 minutes? What about 5 minutes, you know, negotiating? So the Rabbah says, well, okay, the Rambam says I can't give any reason, but maybe we can give a little reason. So what does the Rabbah say? L'fi she'ein nafsho shel adam kinyano, ela kinyano kadosh baruch. Who gave you a right to submit yourself for punishment, whether it would be lashes or a death penalty? It's not your body. You don't get to give yourself away. So based on these two things, what does Rav Zevin in the Shylock article say? What comes first? He says, given that, a person doesn't own his body, this comes first. A, therefore, B, because a person is not the owner of his body, therefore he can't injure himself, therefore he can't plead guilty, all these things. 1 second, please, okay? That's what Rav Zevin says. Here, this is Rav Zevin. Now, he's not discussing organ donation and the like. That article wasn't about it. But it would seem, If I can't give the pound of flesh to pay off the loan, then I can't give the kidney to get the money to do whatever I needed to do with it either, it would seem, right? So one of the articles, which is in it's about 12 years old, but I call that current for a topic like this. One of the most comprehensive articles is a tshuva in source number 12, written by Rav Yaakov Ariel. Many of you know the name, current chief rabbi of Ramat Gan, a great, great poskim of Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Yaakov Ariel has a multi-volume tshuva called the Tshuvas Ba'ohala Shel Torah. And here in source number 12, he quotes this, and he points out something very interesting. I haven't seen anyone else kind of put these two together, but I hope I'm not misreading him. But Rav Ariel, this is Rav Ariel, the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. This is in source number 12. He says, looking at the same sources, but he says, one second, who said that it's A, therefore B? Look at the key line where I have it underlined. Adam einu ba'alim l'inyin chavala al atzmo. Person can't injure himself. Excuse me, a person is not the owner of his own body. Kevan she'asur lo lachbo ba'atzmo. Because it's asur. So what, here we had, he's not the owner, therefore asur. Rav Ariel, am I missing something? I think I'm right. He just reverses it. I think it's very profound. Think about this. He says, no, because there's an Isser, the Torah says you can't do certain things with your body. Specifically, you can't hurt yourself. Therefore, we've limited your ownership of your body over that. Because it's Isser, therefore. Now you'll say this just seems like sophistry and like, what's the difference? A before A, therefore B, B, therefore A. They're all agreeing. No, says Rav Ariel, a big difference. Continues in the next sentence. Because if, kishechov el beheter, because whenever there's no prohibition, it doesn't just mean it's not a prohibition. Says Rav Ariel, in that case, hu ba'alim al gufo. In other words, says Rav Ariel, the idea that a person could be the owner of his or her own body is not necessarily foreign to Judaism. We don't start with an assumption that you're not the owner, therefore, X, Y, Z halachos. The halachos come first, then the philosophy. The way Rav Zevin read the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and others is, no, the philosophical assumption comes first. You don't own your body, therefore you can't do certain things with it. Rav Ariel is more halachic-centric. He says, no, the halacha comes first. Halacha is you can't do certain things. That shows that you don't own it for those things. But if there wouldn't be such a halacha, like, for example, for pikuach nefesh, to save a person, you're allowed to have surgery and the like. That shows that in those contexts, you do own your own body. It's not an all or nothing thing. He then adds something interesting in the name of one of his rebbeim, one of the former chief rabbis, Rav Yisraeli, Rav Shaul Yisraeli, is that so? That Rav Yisraeli had a different interesting idea. It's not the same as Rav Ariel's, but it's another interesting idea. Rav Yisraeli said here, also in source number 12, Rav Yisraeli specifically wrote an essay against Rav Zevin. You can imagine the two gedolim arguing about the Shylock. It's, you know, in the base medrash, not in the classroom. You know, not in college. Chas v'shalom, lo aleinu, poo-poo-poo-poo. Okay? So, says Rav Yisraeli, apparently, this is from his it's in his sefer, Amud Yamini, but I'm giving it to you still from Rav Ariel, his student's citation. A person is the owner of their own body. Amnam ein hu balim yachid. You're just not the exclusive owner. It's a partnership. Gamba Kadosh Baruch Hu Shutaf Bo. Af al chelko nechshav ha'odam laba'alim. So, I'm not exactly sure what the practical ramifications of this would be, but I just thought it was so interesting philosophically to share with you. Usually, often we think, we're not the owners of our own body. So if you say, you are. You're just not the exclusive owner of your own body. So just like if you shared ownership of something, one partner can't just decide on his or her own what to do with it. You know, there has to be some kind of a hesken between the partners. Also, you own your own body, which is certainly, I think, you know, psychologically how we all feel. We certainly feel in control of our own body, and owners of our own body. But you should just know, there's a shutaf, there's a partner who you have, and you can only do things that the two partners agree to do. Very intriguing. Now, will there be some halachic nafkaminas? There might be. But I'm not ready to go there yet. So what comes out of this? What comes out of this is the following. And that is that we want to allow a person to sell his kidney or the like for an organ donation, we have to really kind of figure out how this whole parsha, again, I don't know if Rav Zevin, when he wrote this article decades ago, ever imagined, but this is the beauty, the beauty, the vibrancy of Torah, that we can now, you know, he took the halachos of the Shulchan, I don't know if the Shulchan Aruch HaRav ever imagined that he'd be included in an article about Shylock. And when they wrote the article about Shylock, I don't know if they ever thought we'd be worrying about selling organs in the end of the 20th, beginning of the 21st century. But that is exactly the beauty of halacha. I saw recently someone described it as a winding staircase, where as you go up, you end in the same place each time. So on the one hand, we're advancing. On the other hand, somehow we seem to... I'm not sure I'm doing justice to the quote, but it was a very beautiful image. Anyway, so here, to the extent that you, if you don't own your own body at all, Rav Ariel says many times in this tshuva, according to Rav Zevin, you don't own your own body. So how could you possibly think of selling it? You don't own your own body. Again, to donate it to sell, I don't know how to turn this off, I'm not a wise girl, I'm sorry. To donate it, if the Torah would say that, if there's a heter, is one thing. But to take money for it, so there, you can't sell it unless it's something that's really, unless really yours. So, according to Zevin, it may be much harder to come up with a heter for that. But Ariel says, in his own mind, maybe I could imagine it should be allowed to sell. The only reason it wouldn't be allowed is if it's usur. But if there's a situation where it's anyway mutter to donate, so what's to say that I can't then sell it also? And according to Rav Yisraeli, also, it depends. Maybe for my own part of the partnership, maybe yes, maybe no. So. Yeah, fair enough.
Is the whole based on selling, or does it also apply to donating without money?
I'm only talking about selling. We did in the spring, we discussed the donating, which is easier to understand, obviously. But this, what I'm trying to add this year is that controversial point. I don't want to run too late. We have officially 10 more minutes. So.
15.
Ask away, yeah. Right. I have not read Rav Yisraeli's essay in the original, but it's a very intriguing idea. And you could imagine it has very wide and compelling application. Okay. So let's now turn to the last part of the, last parts of the smaller two parts of the shiur, which is, number one, assuming that there's a mitzvah, am I allowed to take money for that? Don't we have a rule of not getting money, which we saw in the 2 weeks ago in the shiur about medicine, doctors getting paid, we spoke about that, so we want to revisit that issue right now. And then I want to discuss a little bit how public policy and halacha should or shouldn't interact. So take a look at sources 13 and 14. 13 is the same Radbaz that we saw number 11, but instead of his commentary on the Torah, on the Rambam, this is his own responsa, his tshuvas, the great Radbaz. So he wrote a tshuva which we saw last semester in our organ donation shiur, where he was discussing a case of a person, not, again, in the time of the Radbaz, hundreds and hundreds of years ago in Egypt, they didn't yet have a transplant unit, you know, University of Cairo Hospital. But what did they have, if you remember? Again, we're coming close to 3 weeks, so we can remember the time, the cruelty of our enemies. The Radbaz was discussing the issue where you had these two Jews in the dungeon, and the wicked guy goes to the one, if you let me chop off your arm or blind you, I'll let your friend live. But if not, I'm going to kill your friend. Right? Not that, you know, 60 years or 70 years from the Nazis, we could all imagine this. I can't imagine a Jew doing such a thing. But unfortunately, we can imagine our enemies doing it. I think before the World War II, if I would have read that tshuva, I would have thought, come on, how could it be? Now we know how it could be. People can be sadistic and cruel, especially when they have Jews in their grasp. So in that case, so it's not exactly donating it like putting the kidney in your body, but it's pretty similar. I'm going to give up a part of my body to save your life. So what do you say? Am I obligated to do that? Pikuach nefesh lo tamar al dam riecha. It's a mitzvah, save a person's life. So the Radbaz there said, and again, we don't have time to read it all inside now, but we did see that in that previous shiur. Source number 13 said the Radbaz, there is no obligation. Derachecha darchei noam, he says, the Torah would be less than pleasant if it required a person to do such a level of self-sacrifice to help someone else. He didn't say you can't do it. He said you're not obligated to do it. It would be a violation of Derachecha Darchei Noam to obligate you to do it. Now, that was his judgment. I could see someone maybe reaching an opposite judgment, but that was his judgment. But then he adds, after all, you're going to put your life at risk. The surgery, again, it's one thing to put your life at risk in a hospital in Ein Kerem. It's another thing, you know, in the dungeon in Cairo with the guy with the axe. It'd be a miracle if you didn't bleed to death or die of infection. So Sedra Baz, given those level of risk, you're not obligated. But he added, even though it's not an obligation, he says it is a midas chasidus. So he said, again, now if it's a huge risk, he thinks you're a chassid shota, you shouldn't do it. But 2012, kidney transplants are unbelievably safe, medically speaking. I don't mean they're as safe as walking to the cafeteria to get a cup of water, but the advances are unbelievable. The percentage of donors who survive with their quality of life completely unaffected is in the high 90s. It's unbelievable. Nisim v'niflos, what they could do now. So you can't really say there's a heavy sakana snafash. There's some, which is why we're not obligating the person to be the kidney donor, but it's really a midas chasidus va'ashrei chelko. In light of that, comes along source number 14, the Chuvas Maase Choshev. That is Rav Mordechai Halperin. Some of you may know him, a contemporary authority on science and halacha and technology and halacha. So Rav Halperin says in source number 14, he's discussing explicitly selling organs, the modern Shaila, our question. He says, let's skip to the third or fourth line or so. He says, listen, I'll paraphrase the first few lines. He says, listen, we saw, when I say we, I mean us 2 weeks ago in our shiur on doctors striking, that doctors are allowed to charge, but A, they're not allowed to charge for everything, and they're not allowed to overcharge. However, the Shulchan Aruch said, but if they do overcharge and you accept, again, we're not going to give the Man of the Year Award, Woman of the Year Award, but it is binding. So he discusses a little bit of that, and should you charge, and how much you charge, but then he adds, anyway, he says, in this case, ubifrat benidon didan, in our case, shal trumas evarim, organ donation, shekvar ha'elinu le'el, when did we say earlier? Meaning he quoted that Radbaz about the dungeon case. You're not really obligated to give up your organ. Again, it's a lot better than it was 400 years ago in Cairo. But it's, at the end of the day, giving up your kidneys is giving up your organ. And we accept this position of the Radbaz that a person is not obligated to give up an organ to save another person. It's not nothing. Rather, it's midas chasidus. And therefore, given the fact that anyway it's not a real chiyuv, if a person says, I only want to do it, rak trumat hatashlum, you know, I don't have to do it. If the Torah told me I had to do it, I would do it. But the Torah said, I don't have to do it. It's Amidus Chasidus. Do I look like a chassid to you? I could become one for $50,000. Kartel, payas, it's all, you know. I could do it. It's Amidus Chasidus. So says Rav Halperin, in that case, given that, ordinarily to do an obligation, a mitzvah, we had learned, Mahu Bechinam, Afata Bechinam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us Torah for free, so we're supposed to follow his thing, and ideally we're supposed to do mitzvahs for people for free. But says Rav Halperin, if it's not really a mitzvah, or at least an obligation, it's only a midas chasidus, then zechuto lidroshto, he has the right. Mikomakom, he adds, adayin aleinu levarer im achein nachon hadavar v'hagun mitzad atarim lidrosh avurza shuma kaspi. Because it's a separate discussion whether this is a good thing to do, a nice thing to do, a menschlich thing to do. Yeah, it says, but he thinks, technically speaking, it should be mutter, given the fact that anyway, it's not a strict obligation. Comes along Rav Ariel, in source number 15, and he says he's not so sure. Again, he plugs it back into his machlokas between Rav Zevin and Rav Yisraeli. And he points out that it's true that the Radbaz had said it's not an obligation, but he says, it is a mitzvah, and therefore, even though according to Reb Zevin, it's going to be prohibited no matter what, he thinks, because it's not yours, I can't do a mitzvah with your...
Make a partnership?
Well, I don't want anything from her. Is this yours?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't do a mitzvah with her bag. Forget getting paid. I can't do a mitzvah even for free. I can't do anything with her bag. So again, according to Reb Zevin, Reb Ariel thinks, you can't go anywhere. You don't own your body, you can't do anything with it, unless the Torah told you you could. However, he said, he adds, maybe a corner of Israeli where you do own something, so maybe the issue was, can you make money off it and the like? He says, well, even though it's a mitzvah, maybe even though technically you own part of your body, you still can't get money because it's a mitzvah. Ella rakal bitul zmano kipoel batel ukan ulai gamatzro. He says, listen, we started off by saying, we've seen this a few shurim, that there's a mitzvah, just like you have to return someone's wallet, hashavas avedo, hashavas gufo, you have to return there. So when it comes to the mitzvah of returning a lost object, you don't get paid for returning that. But let's say a person had to take off work to return your wallet. Let's say the person had to undergo some kind of pain or something like that. So that you could get repaid for. Not the mitzvah, but the ancillary things. Those other costs that came along with the mitzvah. So here also, says Rav Ariel, maybe in principle, even if you can't, again, it's a little bit a clever legal maneuver, even though technically maybe you can't get paid for the mitzvah, and at that point he and Rav Halpern seem to have a little bit of a debate, but you're going to be out of work a few days, you're going to be in a little bit of pain, that we can try to put a dollar figure on. And that, again, maybe not for the mitzvah part of it, but the other things, maybe that would be allowed. So let's end with the last two sources very briefly, sources 16 and 17. I think these are good ways to conclude. I think it'll wrap up a lot of the factors which I want to leave you with. Source number 16 is kind of a summary from Dr. Abraham. And he mentions something here which we didn't read it previously inside, but if you go back to the previous time we quoted him in source number 7, he has a line there as well, but he elaborates on the principle more here in source number 16. And here is where he discusses the following. This is what I alluded to at the beginning of this year, which is, to what extent, again, this, I'm asking you a question now, which I'm only going to answer in a limited way, narrow way, but you will understand immediately this has far-reaching implications for how we understand everything that's important in life. And that is, to what extent do motivations matter? To what extent do we only care about doing the right thing? And to what extent do we care about why the person did the right thing? This is an issue which philosophers and ethicists, Jew and non-Jew alike, discuss. I happen to think it's a very fascinating question. And into that breach wades Dr. Abraham, and at the end, armed with something that he heard from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And here in source number 16, Dr. Abraham makes, again, eventually he quotes the name of Orbach as well, he makes his position very, very clear. He says, of course, you may not be obligated to donate the kidney, but to do so would be a mitzvah. And then he says, I just want to read you one key point, one second. Take a look at the fourth line down. I'm at source number 16. Actually, you know what? Let's just read the quote from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Read the quote from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Im ha-toreim hu oni osher rotze bakach lefroa chavaso achol v'yadua shematzo bakach nefesh mi-Yisrael v'adai k'ovid mitzvah af al gav shebishvil hatzala bilvad lo haya toreim. Says Dr. Abraham, says Rav Orbach, who cares what your motivation is? Even if we could hook you up to a lie detector test, or maybe you wouldn't need to, you'd be happy to admit it yourself. Just to save a person's life, you're not interested. You're not willing. You have a vacation plan this summer. You can't be holed up in the hospital. You have stuff to do. I'm not willing. I'm not obligated. I'm not willing. It's a big mitzvah. Okay, I'll do other mitzvahs. I'm not obligated. Oh, for the money. Now let's talk. So you'll say, oh my gosh, horrible, disgusting. Maybe yes, maybe no. But says Dr. Abraham, and again, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Orbach very explicitly, maybe yes, maybe no. But the motivation does not change the mitzvah quality of the act. Either it's a mitzvah or it's not. Your motivation is the cherry on top, or it's without the cherry on top. But the cake is the mitzvah, and that's the result. If you're doing something good, you're saving someone's life, we care far less about the motivations. And therefore, even though our instinct is to maybe, you know, cream this guy who's, oh, I only want the money, okay, but tachlis, he's going to save a person's life. That's the Iker. Again, as I said, I'm only discussing this in a very narrow context, but you can imagine this has broad ramifications. He adds, by the way, and again, I've been giving some over-the-top examples deliberately, but the truth is, I think it's very realistic that in many, many cases, and I would say with pride, certainly by Unzara, we're talking about fellow Jews here, how many Jews would really be that crass? I don't mean none, I'm not naive. But I think if you told me that there's someone who was selling an organ, I would imagine, in general, not just with Jews, but I hope I'm right that I would say especially, it must be that there's a pretty desperate situation here. It's not stam a guy, again, I'm giving you the over-the-top examples, he wants a summer vacation and kitchen extension and all that. But bottom line, you think really there's a person who would sell an organ just for that? Otherwise they'd let that person die? Yeah, there could be, I'm not naive. But what's at least as likely? Someone who's desperate. So even if they only have financial pressures, a person who's living under the weight of tremendous obligations, outstanding debts, lo pashut. And number two, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, you think he's like a Hollywood screenwriter, lahavdil? He paints this unbelievable vivid picture. I'm quite sure there's been at least one book or movie about it. Says Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, what about the following case? A person, I gave it to you, I gave you this illustration in the beginning of the shiur. They have their own relative who's dying. Their own relative who's desperate for money. And they need the money to help save the other person. So where are they going to get the money? They don't have an extra $50,000 to pay for the chemo or whatever. So they say they'll sell their organ. They'll save the person who's going to get the kidney. And with the money, they're going to save their father. So the Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, you're going to look at such a person and say you're a bum because you only did it for money? On the contrary, says Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he did twice in mitzvah of Hatzalas Nefashos. Now you'll tell me, could you imagine in Shemayim that the one that he did for money is on the same level as the father who he was selfless, he was even willing to sell his own kidney to save his father? Can you compare that to the person he was willing to save for $50,000? Maybe there's a difference, maybe not. But that's in Shemayim. In this world, the person, says Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, did a double mitzvah of Hatzalas Nefashos. Two times good. Not bad. And therefore, in principle at least, not at all opposed to having a system that allows people to sell organs. So I conclude now by just mentioning the tension that Rav Ariel explicitly relates to source number 17. Rav Lau, the former chief rabbi, current chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, in an article in the Truman Journal a number of years ago, and this Rav Halpern also, and Rav Ariel here in source number 17, they all, God bless them, they're not just in the Beis Medrash, they know what's going on in the real world, they're all aware of the complexities of the public policy debate. What's the public policy debate? And here I'm paraphrasing explicitly where Ariel writes very beautifully in here, source number 17. On the one hand, there's a shortage of organs. How many people want to donate organs? So if we would all of a sudden put up a sign, $50,000 for a kidney, you don't think there'd be a lot more organs? You don't think a lot more people would be saved instead of dying on a waiting list? Of course there would be. On the other hand, what would we also inevitably be creating a horrible black mark, a haves and have-nots. He speaks about middle people. Rav Ariel speaks about brokers looking to get rich off providing and holding people ransom, you know? So we could be going into a very scary place. So which public policy goal is better? Which one is worth at the expense of the other? Lo pashut. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the reason that America or Israel or pretty much every Western country at present prohibits selling of organs is exactly for the reason I just mentioned. However, many people, not only Poskim, but I did a Google search and I came up with a number of articles of transplant surgeons or medical ethicists, non-Jewish, have been pushing the envelope recently in various scholarly articles questioning that assumption. The assumption being that it's better to prohibit sale because that the good outweighs the bad. And numerous people have been pointing out, maybe not. Maybe whatever the risks are, but we double, triple, quadruple the amount of available organs. This is not pashut. And therefore, Ariel ends with something which I'd say is different. Instead of saying, therefore, because of all the fears, ossering it, Ariel ends with, l'chein min hara'ui shehamedina Titkein takanot matimot asher mitzadecha yodidu et atormim letrom evarim umeidoch. Right? On the one hand, the Medina should figure out a way. On the one hand, to come up with rules which encourage donors. On the other hand, that will prevent the corruption and the immoral things which could cover. Now, the answer could be that it's impossible. So, what to do then, I don't know. But I think it's very, very important. On the one hand, the poskim are aware of this. On the other hand, again, I can't speak for them, I'll speak for myself, but that's something that experts need to figure out. As he himself said, that's not for the Rav in the Beis Medrash in Ramat Gan to figure out. That's for the public policy health experts. It's exactly the same issue which is being hugely debated now in America over the move towards socialized medicine. There's a lot of good that immediately comes with giving the free health care. On the other hand, there's a reason that everyone in the world runs to America for top medical things, because there's a lot of bad that come. We start giving away for free. Trust me, the level ain't staying the same. So which one is better? These are not simple questions. And it's similar here. We have this kind of public policy dilemma. So the posek, and again, I think it's just, so it should be clear, the poskim, other than Rav Wozner, it seems to what I read, most of the poskim feel that in principle, halacha would not object in principle to selling organs, given the stability to save someone's life. Again, you may not give the person Maftar Yonah, you know, on Yom Kippur, maybe they're not the biggest tzaddik, but they're still saving a life. To prohibit that carte blanche across the board writ large? So most of the poskim, I think, in principle, accept that, that maybe we should reconsider that. On the other hand, the poskim who know what's going on in the world are aware that maybe that would cause law. And therefore, there seems to really need to be some kind of a shituf pula, I don't know if it actually is happening, but it's clearly necessary, between the ethicist / poskim and those public policy experts to see, is there a way, maybe yes, maybe no, to kind of thread the needle to be able to have the best of both worlds. All right, Hashem should give a refuah shleima to all those who need it.